Welcome to episode 94 of the Fertility Podcast. Now, I'm putting this out on Monday, the 14th of August, 2017. And I'm just stating the date because last week in the UK, Fertility Network, which is the main infertility charity, released some findings about the discrepancies in the UK regarding funding for IVF. Now, we have a system where CCGs in different areas, they decide how they allocate their budget. And what's happening is what is being termed as a postcode lottery, and different groups are cutting funding. There's no regulation. Some are offering one round of IVF. Some aren't offering any at all. And the NICE guidelines in the UK are three rounds of IVF should be available to couples who have been diagnosed with having a problem on the NHS when trying to start their family. Now, this is a hugely divisive issue. And if you are in the UK, you'll be fully aware of the funding crisis that our NHS has. If you're not in the UK, I'm sure you've heard about it. Last week, I was invited to speak on the issue on BBC Manchester, where I'm based, and also BBC Five Live, two different radio stations. And I was asked my opinion, and I was highlighting my very strong beliefs that everybody should have the right to try. And with infertility being classed as a disease by the World Health Organization, what we really need to work on is people's perception. Because still, it seems, and I'm sure you've experienced this, that there is this assumption that IVF is a lifestyle choice, that you've left it too late, therefore, are you going to go down that route? Not that this is such a traumatic and amazingly difficult thing for you to have to deal with, and this is your only option for you to have a family. Now, I watched a programme on the BBC yesterday morning called Sunday Morning Live, which featured Dr. Geeta Nargund, a previous guest of mine, Richard Clottier, who has also been a guest of mine, and Jessica Hepburn, three brilliant speakers on the topic. See what links I can put in the show notes. My reasons for mentioning it was there were some adverse opinions about IVF being available on the NHS, giving that kind of standard remark that you will have experienced probably, where somebody, if they've heard that you're having trouble conceiving, might say to you, why don't you just adopt? There are plenty of children out there. Now, I don't really want to go into the ins and outs of how I feel about those kind of throwaway comments, but what I will say is that if you have found this podcast because you yourself are struggling to conceive, then you kind of need to put your blinkers on with those kind of comments and stick to your own goal to have your own family. And if you want to go through fertility treatment, make sure you've researched it, make sure you've asked questions. If you want to really ensure that your body is in the best place possible whilst you're trying to conceive, so that fertility treatment isn't a route you have to go down ideally, then my next guest is going to be so fascinating to you. I'm going to be speaking to Dr. Cecilia Kittick, who is an exercise physiologist, talking about the importance of exercise when you're trying to have a family. This is applicable to men and women. All right, now this might sound obvious, but so many of us aren't in good shape and we're trying to reproduce, yet we're not looking after our bodies, from what we're fueling it with to how we're moving around. And this is so overlooked, especially in British society when we've got an obesity crisis, which is another issue with the NHS. I won't go down that route. So I'm digressing a little bit, but what I just wanted to say, this is a resource for you to hopefully get really informed on your fertility journey. I speak to all sorts of fertility experts if this is your first time listening. I speak to those who are clinicians in traditional IVF facilities. I speak to natural fertility experts. I speak to people who are focused on mild IVF. I also speak to all sorts of people sharing their own journeys. IVF is not a guarantee. Okay, it is a brilliant scientific invention that is a process that can help you on your route to parenthood. But what is important, however you get there, is that you are the best version of you you can be. So I hope that you find this episode of particular interest, and I hope it makes you move. So I'm now going to welcome Dr. Cecilia Kittick to the podcast to talk about her journey her fertility journey and also what she's now doing, because she's created a world first online exercise prescription service for women and men undergoing fertility treatments. Brilliant. So we'll find out more about that after we've said hello. So welcome to the podcast, Cecilia.
Thank you very much for having me, Natalie.
And we've just established that we've kind of got twins on the other side of the world, twin boys around 2 years old who are having tantrums.
going through the pain together.
Apparently the next age is a threenager. Have you heard that term? It's brilliant.
Oh, no, please. I don't want to know. It's always, I think we get stuck in our own little silos, and I'm quite happy to be here at the moment, just getting through each day.
So tell me about your own fertility journey, because we just chatted a little bit and you hinted at that you'd had treatment. So do you mind telling me about the point when you realised that it wasn't going to be straightforward to have a family?
Yes, probably when I was about 20, I was diagnosed with really bad endometriosis, or I'd known that I had had endometriosis for a while, and that was probably my first operation to remove it. And they said it was quite extensive at the time. And my specialist alluded to the fact that it could impact on my fertility, but at that tender age of 20, it wasn't really at the forefront of my mind. So probably wasn't until I was early 30s that I started trying and had no luck. And so I went back for another endometrial operation and removal of lesions and adhesions and things like that. And of course, you come out and they're telling you, oh, within 6 months, you know, you'll fall pregnant at the drop of a hat. And the next time we see you through the doors here, you'll be having a baby. And anyway, a few years passed by and that wasn't to be the case. I ended up in my late 30s having to go through IVF after, again, you know, trying for quite a while. And so that was going to be one of the options. And at the time, it was probably attributed to my endometriosis, but I have an inkling there may have been some male factor issues in there as well. And so I went through multiple rounds of treatment and was very lucky to be successful towards the end of our period of trying, which was back-to-back cycles. And as you said, now I'm lucky enough to have a little two-year-old boy.
So you said you had back-to-back cycles. How many cycles did you have before you fell pregnant?
I actually had 14.
Wow.
Yes, and they had said that my chances were slim to none, and the only way I was able to get through 14 rounds, I guess, was by really focusing on my health and looking after myself and being conscious of what treatment was doing to my body and having an understanding around the physiological processes and knowing what I was going through. And I guess as a scientist too, having all of that information really helped me through the process, and I wouldn't have been able to do it if I didn't exercise and look after myself.
So just explain your background before we talk about what that led you on to post becoming a mum.
So I'm an exercise physiologist. I studied exercise science and then did further study in the area of inflammation and oxidative stress, and that led me to my PhD in exercise immunology. So for the last 20 years, I've been looking at the effects of exercise and, you know, the health outcomes, and also how it's used in a clinical setting. As an exercise physiologist, we actually use exercise as medicine to treat a number of different conditions, and the evidence out there to support exercise as a therapy for psychological diseases, metabolic diseases, cardiovascular diseases, pulmonary diseases, and infertility is overwhelming.
I mean, we know that exercise is good for us, but I don't think we really understand how beneficial it can be, even in the 21st century, do we?
I think it's more, we have a general awareness, but knowing how to get the prescription right for treat particular conditions and actually engaging people in the process can be quite difficult. When I went through my fertility treatment, what surprised me on my very first visit at the clinic was that no one asked me about my physical activity or my diet. And I would sit in the waiting room at the clinic, because I was in there lots of times, as you can imagine, and never once did you get a feel for, I guess, these patients having a concept of how influential lifestyle change could be to the outcome of their treatment. And particularly when people are paying so much money and going through cycle after cycle without that awareness that they could be improving their chances, in some instances up to 300%, by adopting, you know, physical activity and engaging in a healthy diet. Yeah, it's almost unethical in a sense that these services aren't incorporated into practice already.
Can you describe the fertility or the IVF landscape in Australia at the moment? Because this week that we're speaking, which is the 9th of August, in the UK, a big story is broken about how there's even more funding cuts to IVF treatment on our NHS. And there's a whole lot of argument going on about whether or not it should be funded. Do you get any government funding for treatment, or is it all self-funded?
We do. We're incredibly lucky here, and particularly when we are comparing it to the limited funding available in the UK and also in the States, the costs that are astronomical. So we have, if you have private health insurance, then you have coverage of certain elements through that. But our health system, Medicare, actually will fund a huge portion of the treatment, and there's no limit on the number of cycles that you can undertake. But in Australia, the $79 million that gets spent a year on IVF specifically, that's only 1% of the Australian health expenditure budget for Medicare.
Wow. Okay. I mean, in the UK, to be eligible... In the UK, to be eligible for IVF on the NHS, they do insist that your BMI is under a certain amount. And I know of friends who were told they were too overweight to be eligible. And there's a whole then issue with women who are struggling to conceive and are dealing with PCOS, and that's affecting their weight gain, which is a whole other conversation for us to have. What I'm saying is there is some mention of your general well-being, possibly more so than you've experienced in Australia. But let's move on to what you've set up and tell me about the IVF project.
The IVF project is really born out of the need for women and men to access fertility services that are going to support their assisted reproductive treatment. So we deliver exercise prescription and dietitian-based nutrition guidance for anyone anywhere in the world undergoing treatment. And I guess the main reason, as I said, for setting it up is around noticing the need that these services weren't integrated in people's treatment. So we've got an online service that people sign up, all of their medical history is taken into account. They're receiving clinical exercise physiology services for their programming. And it's not just for them, it's for their partner as well, which is really important because there's benefits regardless of causes of infertility. People can track their exercise through an app on their phone. They receive their program, which they can choose to do in the comfort of their own home, in their lounge room. So it's about making this service accessible.
Now, you've sent me a really interesting article, which I will share in the show notes for this episode, where you've put some kind of top tips about exercise. And as you mentioned, with the male aspect, I think it's really interesting to talk about how exercise can impact sperm quality. And I'm always really keen to shine the light on male factor because it's massively underspoken about and overlooked, I think, all over the world. So just tell me a bit about some of the stats with regards to male factor infertility and the help that exercise can give to sperm quality.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the causes of male fertility can be many, but particularly if males are overweight, then they're 50% more likely to have issues surrounding fertility. Now, exercise has been shown to reduce, I guess, the primary causes associated with male infertility, which is an increase in oxidative stress and an increase in inflammation. So exercise can improve sperm quality and reduce DNA damage by 50%. In most clinics, the testing that they do relates to the morphology or the count and motility, and they may not actually be looking at DNA fragmentation. So some aspects of male infertility cannot be highlighted through the specific testing that's done.
I've looked at the issues with sperm DNA in previous episodes, so I will put those links in the show notes for this because there's a lot more to be said. And for now, I want to talk about some of the other areas that you've highlighted because you've also talked about PCOS and how exercise could also help that, which I don't think the awareness around is big enough. So tell me a bit about that.
Well, absolutely. And in Australia, the guidelines actually state that lifestyle should be the primary intervention surrounding increasing physical activity and looking at diet. So it is a proven effective treatment for women with PCOS, particularly just into restoring normal ovulation so that women can get pregnant naturally. One study actually showed that in women that undertook a six-month exercise intervention, ovulation was restored in 89% of the women and 77% of them became pregnant. These are real huge stats, and that's the most important thing about everything that we do is it's evidence-based. So in some of these women then, if ovulation's restored, it means that there's a greater chance of getting pregnant naturally as well.
Amazing.
Now, it's interesting that you say that there's a BMI cutoff with respect to the NHS, because benefits in fertility and IVF outcome and other assisted reproductive treatments for women with PCOS are realized once they start exercising and have a healthy diet, even when their weight doesn't change. So they should be asking, do you exercise regularly and have a healthy diet? Not what's your BMI?
I mean, I do remember some of those questions being asked, don't get me wrong, but the BMI was the BMI and your weight was what they gauged it on.
But it's one of the best tools that the clinics have got in terms of showing the evidence that if you are in a higher BMI category, we do know that it has implications for fertility. But in those women, probably aren't exercising or being active yet anyway. And once they start those lifestyle changes, it changes in fertility without their weight necessarily changing.
Now, another of the points in the top tips that you've shared with me is this banning the bed rest after embryo transfer, and this idea that women are told that they should be on complete bed rest. I hadn't actually heard. I don't know whether that's something more prominent in Australia. I mean, I tried to exercise through my treatment, post-treatment, once pregnant, but I know I was wary about, say, doing heavy weight, so I'd alter what I was doing to maybe swimming or yoga. Is that the kind of advice that you'd give?
Every prescription needs to be really tailored to an individual's physical activity background. So I guess what their current routine is. We do have an appreciation of their lean mass and fat mass to get an understanding then of particular areas that we might need to focus on with their prescription. I think to give a prescription specifically around the post-transfer period, generally speaking, you are going to take on probably lighter and more moderate activities, of course, within risks that are evident with respect to ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome or looking at the very rare occurrence of ovarian torsion. And of course, all of those clinical factors are considered with the exercise prescription. As you pointed out, the pre-egg collection exercise and diet that's so important. It's the exercise and diet while you're waiting for your transfer in terms of what's happening in your endometrium and how that's influenced. And then, of course, after the transfer, after that two-week wait, and then getting back into adopting those healthy practices, and particularly if you're lucky enough to have a successful transfer leading into pregnancy, because it's not just about lifestyle changes for a successful IVF outcome, it's about that lifestyle change for pregnancy so that you can have a healthy pregnancy and leading on to being able to have the energy to run around after your child afterwards.
We'll hear again from Dr. Cecilia Kittick in just a moment after this little message from some of my supporters, my sponsors, who really help make this podcast grow and get it out there. The Fertility Podcast is supported by Ovusense. If you're trying to monitor your cycle and finding it overwhelming, Ovusense is the only ovulation monitor on the market that is a Class 2 medical device. It has a vaginal sensor and app, and it fits like a tampon, so it's really easy to use and comfortable to wear. You use it at night whilst you sleep, and then in the morning, you simply remove, wash it, and download your data to see your cycle pattern. Now, Ovusense has proven comfortable for women in over 10,000 cycles of use and can predict ovulation up to a day in advance and can confirm it with 99% accuracy. To find out more, visit ovusense.com. I know how daunting it is finding information about fertility issues, so I wanted to tell you about The Fertility Show. It's on the 4th and 5th of November at London's Olympia, and is open to anyone wanting to start or extend their family. Meet experts face-to-face at the exhibition or attend one of the brilliant seminars by a leading fertility specialist. Visit thefertilityshow.co.uk for more information. Now, I mean, I think it's really interesting and amazing that we don't actually realise that this is beneficial, but I think that there is such a fear when you've been trying and trying to get pregnant and you're going through fertility treatment. I suppose you're almost wanting to not move too much. It's weird, isn't it? You're kind of being so protective about your body, whereas you're saying, actually, that's what's going to be even more of a benefit.
Oh, absolutely. And that's the whole thing. It's about getting the right prescription for your circumstances. You know, highly trained athletes, and in a lot of circumstances, it might actually be reducing the volumes that they're doing or reducing the high intensity exercise sessions or making sure that the timing of them suitable around their treatment cycles. And for other individuals, it might be, again, just taking them from being totally sedentary and having thought about being active before and ensuring that we're giving them a safe and effective program to build them up to improve their chance of success.
So the IVF Project is a membership site. So explain how it works and what you get.
Well, as soon as you sign up, so the memberships are for 12 months, and that provides you with all of your exercise physiology prescription for the entire 12-month period around every stage of your treatment. And that could be if you're going through stimulation, even in people that are just preparing to start going through stimulation, or getting organized, you know, for 3 months or 6 months before to ensure that they improve their chances. Along with that, they actually receive access to scientific resources that will improve and educate and enhance their understanding of the real impact that behavior change can have. We're looking at, as our membership grows in the coming months, having monthly webinars that will be around invited specialists coming and showcasing different psychological strategies and techniques for managing stress. We'll have our dietitian on board to do short video conferences where there's an opportunity for Q&A. Our members receive advice and support for the whole time as well, accessible through our experts. They also receive a food tracking app where we provide them with tailored nutrition guidance for what they should be eating, and we provide an analysis of their dietary intake as well and provide them with individualized feedback. And all of this is, again, access to those clinical services, but ensuring that they can do that online. Our service supports both female and male clients and is easily accessible via our online portal or via the IVF Project app. And all of this for less than the cost for the female and male to go and see an exercise physiologist once.
I think it's a really, really interesting idea. I haven't actually heard of an exercise physiologist before. I don't know whether they exist in the UK.
An exercise physiologist is an allied health professional. They actually have the highest level of training to prescribe exercise for the prevention and treatment of clinical conditions. So they don't only have the skills to design and deliver and evaluate effective exercise intervention, but they also have the skills of behaviour management and looking at motivational change and those elements as well. So it's like a holistic approach to effective and safe exercise prescription.
And ultimately, it can be free, the exercise that you're doing.
Oh, absolutely. That's the whole thing about this. So making healthier food choices and adopting physical activity is something that doesn't have to cost you anything. If you've got a clinical condition, though, the person that you need to be seeing to know where to start and to know what's safe for your particular medical condition is someone that is suitably trained to give you that prescription.
Okay, well, I'll put all the details on the show notes. I think it's a really, really interesting concept and one that I think is so overlooked. I mean, we know that we should be more healthy, especially when trying to conceive. And I'm always amazed that we might enter into trying to get pregnant without being so. Somebody said to me recently, you wouldn't go and play Wimbledon without training beforehand. So why try and have a baby without trying to make your body as, you know, as fit and strong as it can be?
Yeah, I think too, with the limitations that you're saying are coming in to the UK, where they may only fund one or two cycles, you want to give yourself the best chance of success going into that cycle. And for women that have never exercised before, or it's not part of their usual routine, or someone that wants to know if they're doing too much, then they can get that specialised advice to know where to get started. I said to my specialist once, do you ask women about their level of physical activity? And he said, oh, I just tell them to exercise while they're watching Home and Away.
Oh, my goodness.
And I thought, for someone that has no experience or exposure, how do they know what they're doing? How do they know how to do it safely? And how do they know what they're doing is effective?
Cecilia, it's been lovely talking to you. And I'm going to put the details, like I say, of the IVF Project on the website. And the brilliant thing is, as you've said, that it's online. So wherever people are, they can get in touch and find out more. And I know you do really regular, brilliant blogs that are really informative as well. So thank you for sharing. And how long has it been going?
We just launched in the middle of this year. So we've been servicing clients face-to-face through our other work. But this is the first time that we decided to let everyone in the world have access to the program. am.
Okay. Well, you can see all about your story on your website too. I'm just having a look whilst we're talking. Well, look, let's keep in touch. I wish you the best of luck with it.
Yeah. Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you, Dr. Kittick. I think, as I've said, this is a great concept. And the show notes for this episode for you to find out more about the IVF project are thefertilitypodcast.com/exercise. Now, whilst you're visiting the website and listening to the podcast, do subscribe, because if this is your first listen to the Fertility Podcast, what you'll now get is an episode guide where I've put 10 episodes together that will kind of guide you through different things about fertility. I've got over 90 episodes. I'm heading towards the 100 mark, and I'm trying to make them as concise for you to listen to as possible. I mean, you can listen to them in whichever order you like. Do sign up, and therefore I can help you really kind of get down to the nitty gritty of my content. As always, I'd always welcome your feedback. If the rumbling discussion that's been going on in the UK has upset you, if you'd like to share your own story, if it's got you angry, however you feel about it, you can email me, Natalie@thefertilitypodcast.com. Or another thing that you can do that's pretty cool is on my website, thefertilitypodcast.com, on the right hand side, as you look at it, there's a little button called Speak Pipe, and you can leave me a message. More than happy to share your views, or we can talk directly. So it'd be great to hear from you. And if you're going into iTunes to subscribe, I don't like to keep asking this, but if you can rate and review the podcast, if you've found it useful, that helps other people find out about it too. Oh, and one last thing, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to a guide to the best infertility podcasts of the year, in which the Fertility Podcast was at the top of the list. I'm never at the top of the list for anything. So I'm all chuffed about that. And I thank you again for your support. And until the next time.